This morning, we're going to be exploring the parable called the Parable of the Good Samaritan. And many of us have heard this, and many of us have heard it hundreds, maybe even thousands of times. And yet, also, you know, I want to honor, you know, there may be some of us who maybe we haven't heard it, or maybe we sort of heard it, but we haven't had a chance to really listen to it. And I want to work this through. So this there's a lot at stake in this message. There's a lot at stake because the message is challenging. It says something about what we're to be doing. There's a moral guidance in this. And if you're a guest with us this morning and you hear this message of moral guidance, you may be wondering, so do these people here, do they follow that? Do they do that? Do they make their best effort? Are they moved at heart like the Samaritan in the parable to do as God moves them to do? And if, as a guest, we find the answer yes, then your lives, our lives, will be changed forever. And if not, we'll go looking somewhere else and, so to speak, pass by on the other side, until we can find that sense of hope in a community that does as God does. And so it's a challenging passage, both for the guests and for us who've been around a long time as part of the church family here. And so let's hear it together and be moved to see what's at stake. For us who are guests, what's at stake is nothing short of your bond with your Creator, and that you could have a whole avenue opened up for your life of new possibilities, of new options, of a new way of seeing things different than you've seen before, and where there's hope in place of despair, and there's community in place of loneliness. And if for the rest of us, for those of you who are longtime members, the gift here is in hearing anew the ways we might be moved to serve in ways that profoundly, profoundly touch people's lives. So, in this parable, we hear the parable of the Good Samaritan. We also hear the admonition by Jesus and by many preachers at the end, go and do likewise. And so, I want to go a little bit differently, a little bit of a different twist on this. The other thing that we hear is it isn't something that Jesus mentions or that the gospel writer mentions, but is put at the beginning of the passage. And what does it say at the top of the passage? The Good Samaritan, parable of the Good Samaritan, okay? And that's a commentary put in by those who were not connected at the time of Jesus' telling, or in the time of the writing of the gospel. But it's later on, and it causes some of us, we might, in curiosity, wonder, so does the Good Samaritan, does that mean that this is the lone Good Samaritan, and there are many, many, in fact, most other Samaritans are not good? Or does it mean that the Samaritan is good as opposed to the priest and Levite who are bad? And I want to suggest that we go a new way with this passage. And instead of ending up, go and do likewise, I want to start off on a journey where we imagine and let the Holy Spirit move us, shape us, and guide us, and nudge us in seeing something new and different by imagining the people in this parable 3 years after the event of the incident by the side of the road. In fact, I'd like to call this the dust up in the ditch. All right? The dust up in the ditch means there are many people involved. It sounds a little like, World Wrestling Federation kind of thing. But we're not going there. That's not where we're at. We want to explore this in a new way. Now, how many of you have watched a movie more than once? All right? I have seen, I'm embarrassed to say, Heaven can wait. How many know that one? Heaven can wait. I've seen that 10 times. All right? I've seen What's Up, Doc, 14 times. So I'm embarrassed to say that. But the thing is that if I went and saw it again, either one, let's say Heaven Can Wait, if I went to see it again, I could practically speak out the line before they say it. All right? So as we listen to the parable, let's see if we can listen in a way that doesn't anticipate, but just engages with each person and to see how they, what they experience at this dust up in the ditch, and then what happens, what might happen 3 years later. So let's listen. Just then a lawyer stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he said, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What is written in the law? What do you read there?" He answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, Jesus said to him, "You have given the right answer. Do this, and you will live." But wanting to justify himself, he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers, who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road. When he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came near him, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, having poured oil and wine on them. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said, 'Take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend.' Which of these 3, do you think, was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" He said, "The one who showed him mercy." Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." The word of the Lord. So the lawyer, the gospel writer says, wanted to justify himself. He wanted to have a checklist, so to speak. He wanted, who is my neighbor? And he might as well have said, and who is on my checklist so that I can check the box, so that I know and everyone knows that I've done my duty. And this is something that for some of us, we actually love checklists. How many of you love checklists? I have it for a shopping list. If I don't have one of those, I mess up every time. But in some ways, it's not helpful. For knowing there's a checklist, or that this man is asking for a checklist, is a turnoff. Especially if, as I said, we're looking for the ways that God is moving, and whether we are responsive to it. Many, many people are watching and waiting to see whether we are responsive to how God is moving. And great is the day, and great is the moment when they see it in us and in others as we're moved by the Holy Spirit. So let's imagine 3 years from the dust up in the ditch. I want to start with the Samaritan. So the Samaritan, good Samaritan, after he had taken care of the man in the ditch, took him to the inn, he went off and took care of his business, came back and gave the rest of the money to the innkeeper that was needed, and he walked with the man in the ditch back to Jerusalem. Man in the ditch no longer needing to go to Jericho because his his fine linens he was going to sell in Jericho were stolen. So the Samaritan walked him back, put him on his animal. He was still hobbling and still needed some rehab. And he walked him back to Jerusalem and dropped him off at his house. And mentioned, I want to come back and check and see how you're doing in a few months. So the Samaritan, on his way back home, he lived in Samaria, which is north and west of Jerusalem. On his way back, he ran into a group of people who were excitedly telling the stories of what had happened in their lives about a man named Yeshua, they said, Jesus, as we know. And he ran across them and heard some stories from them about how their own lives were changed and how others' lives were changed and how they were being used in a way that was changing everything in their lives. Before, they had been fishermen, tax collectors, and other ways of serving, that now they were moved in ways that were actually bringing healing to people's lives. And the Samaritan was moved. And the Samaritan was asking questions about this. He knew that he'd done a good deed by the side of the ditch, but what he was hearing about now paled, or rather what he had done paled in comparison with what he was hearing the lives of those who were believers in this man named Jesus. And after hearing the stories and being moved, he became a believer. Went back to Samaria, and after studying some more and learning some more, reading through the Bible, praying, he felt moved to start a new church, a new worshiping community in Samaria. And also, this new worshiping community would send missionaries, Samaritan missionaries, to Jerusalem, whose task was, their calling was, to build relationships with the Jewish folks in Jerusalem, turn the page and shift the narrative from hatred of these cousin nations, cousin places, who had built up such huge hatred, animosity, and couldn't see past each other's own foibles, faults. And person by person, they would change the story and shift the narrative and bring about a new way, God's way, beyond the hatred of cousin rivals. So the Samaritan was on the move. But what about the man in the ditch? The man in the ditch, it took him some time to heal. He was badly beaten and wounded. He felt shameful at being in the side of the ditch, naked, bruised and battered, his bones broken, a concussion. It took months and months for him to get back to health. And as he began to get back into health, he began to realize on his own calling. Because here, upon seeing the Samaritan coming after him at the side of the ditch, his first thought was, oh, Lord, send somebody else. Is there anyone else on the road who can help me? But then he realized, no, the Samaritan was and his friend, and is going to stick by him for not for ill or for better, for healing, for wellness, hopes. And so, the man in the ditch, as he began to mend and heal, he decided to financially support the missionaries who would come to Jerusalem from Samaria. And he would provide housing for them in his house and in his friends' houses. And where before he was ashamed to say that he had been in the side ditch, and that a Samaritan, of all people, had helped him, mended him, and befriended him. He hadn't even told his family and friends, let alone his friends in the synagogue. But now he decided the time is now. And he decided that he would tell people what had happened. And he began a small study group of friends at the synagogue who were studying this man named Jesus. And they were learning and discovering that he is the Messiah. And they were wrestling with what to do about that, being Jewish folks at the synagogue, and not wanting to leave their friends and their cherished traditions and their way of living at the synagogue. Yet they persisted as a group to work through, pray, and reflect, stay connected with their friends at the synagogue, and to share with them what they were discovering. The robbers. Shortly after the dust up of the ditch, the robbers were apprehended and thrown into jail. Well, not thrown into jail. You get the idea. So they were in jail. And the chaplains would come to visit with them. And it turns out that one who came to visit them was the man in the ditch. His small prayer group decided to go and visit. And the others in his small group were praying for him as he went to visit the robbers at the jail. And he said to them, "You did for bad, but God means it for good. You had done something that hurt me badly. But on my own, I couldn't forgive you. But only because of God's power and because of small group members who are praying for me right now, I can say I'm sorry that you were in the situation, and I forgive you for what you've done to me in the ditch." Now the robbers were puzzled. They were confused. They'd never encountered this kind of behavior. And slowly, day by day, they too formed a group and even began to pray. And after they got out of jail, some members of the synagogue, including of the small group, helped them find a job. And they joined the small group week to week. Priest learned after the dust up in the ditch of what had happened. Although he had passed by on the one side, that someone else, a Samaritan, came and went to the aid of the man at the ditch. And the priest had thought to himself, there's a man in the ditch. I'm on my way to a seminar that I'm leading. And if I show up at the seminar ready to speak to them and my clothes are tattered and I have blood on my hands, I'm impure, and I won't even be allowed by law to speak to them at the seminar. And it's unsafe out there. If I go to the side, people might accuse me of having done crime. But now I recognize, and I see that I had not moved when God had moved. That my neighbor was not those at the seminar, my neighbor was the man of the ditch. And that I'd walked by. And I felt a sense of shame. And after counseling with a therapist for months, I'd worked through my grief. And then after giving 6 months' notice with the synagogue, I left my ministry with the synagogue. And I began to study with those who were following this man God named Jesus. And I found new hope, a new life, a new power to be one who moves when God moves in my life. And not just one who says, there, go that way, but one who walks the walk. The innkeeper. The innkeeper noticed the Samaritan and was curious, just intrigued by this man who would do what he had done. I mean, the innkeeper himself was wondering whether to accept the Samaritan into the room. Surely there would be blood everywhere. It would be messy. I'd have to spend a lot of time going up there to make sure he was still alive. Well, but I let him in. So when the Samaritan came back, I pulled him aside and I said, man, what are you doing? Why? You didn't have to do that. You could have gone to the side, given him a few band-aids out of your pocket, and gone on your way. Say you've done good, and move out of there as fast as you could. And the Samaritan was fascinated because he was asking me questions about my life. He didn't want to talk so much about what he'd done. He wanted to talk about what was going on with me. He was asking me about my wife. He was asking me about my children. He was asking me about the best fishing holes around the area. And he even began inviting all his friends to the inn. I noticed. They would come in and they'd say, hello, George. How are you doing? My friend, the Samaritan, invited me and said that you do really well in providing care at the inn. And things changed my life. And I was intrigued enough to get up the courage to go and visit church to learn more. So who are you in this story? Are you the Samaritan? The one who has done good, did a good deed, but maybe is looking for a stronger power source so that it isn't just you rallying up the courage to do a good deed on an occasion, but to be plugged into a power source of love that doesn't ever run you dry? Or do you see yourself as the man in the ditch, the person in the ditch? Maybe there's something you're hurting in. Maybe it's something you're grieving about. Maybe it's something you've been struggling with for years and are disappointed that you've never found any sense of hope. It's not something a doctor has been able to fix. It may be something a doctor couldn't fix. Maybe it's something of a misery. And yet, deep down inside, you know there's a place. You know there's a possibility of hope, healing. That mends you inside and out and bonds you with people you'd never thought possible or ever wanted to be bonded with before. Maybe you see yourself as a Robertson. You know you've done something and you feel guilty about it. And you've never been over, ever to get over the guilt. And it bogs you down and maybe you've sort of swept it into the depths of your heart and wondered if ever it might get out, either to hurt you or to heal you, but to fester in you. nothing happens. Or maybe you see yourself as the priest, someone who's always loyal, always at church, always at the right place at the right time. Others see you as good. Others look up to you, but you're looking for something more profound, deeper even than you've been doing before. But that will require a big shift in your life. Leaving something behind in favor of what God's moving you to next. Maybe you see yourself as an innkeeper, an outsider or a guest. You're sort of curious, as I mentioned before, do these guys really walk the walk? Do they do what this Samaritan did? Do they do their best to bond with me and with all those souls like me who want to find out? If that's you, if you're the innkeeper, I want to encourage you to hang in and find the answer. And I think you'll be great. We'll have a newcomers class coming up, and you can learn more about these Samaritans, more about these robbers, more about these other folks around, these priests, Levites, these people in the ditch. Whoever you are, know that the parable is for you. The one who speaks the parable is the one who addresses the lawyer's question and what the lawyer was really after, wanting to justify himself. The one who tells the parable means that those of us who are priests, who walk by on the other side, no longer need to justify ourselves if we pass by, and that there's something else we need to do. No longer do we need to justify ourselves if we're a Levite who helps all the time at the church, but pass this one by to help others. No longer do we need to justify ourselves. No longer is the man in the ditch do we need to justify ourselves that the one who came to help us was someone we'd rather not be helped by. And the hatred we bore and harbored for a whole people we didn't even know. The one who tells the parable means we no longer have to justify ourselves. That the guilt we might feel as robbers is a guilt we have to keep buried in our soul. No longer. He's the one who'll say, go and sin no more. Do you see anyone condemning you now? Do you see anyone holding a stone ready to throw it at you? Neither do I condemn you. No longer do you need to justify yourself. And if you're the innkeeper, no longer do you need to justify yourself in a life alone. Grace, gift, God. Is he open and welcome arms, like the Samaritan helping the man in the ditch, who's come to heal us and bind us together? We are one in the Spirit. We are one in the Lord. Praise, honor, glory.